Jessica Lee Johnson is the author of a new book that's out. It's called Do You Trust Me? Allowing Hope to Triumph Over Tragedy. And Jessica, you're from Grand Rapids?
Yes.
Grand Rapids? Okay. And she joins us in the KAXC studio. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start at the beginning. Tell me a little bit about your life. You start kind of telling us that you had kind of a normal upbringing until some health issues started to happen in your family.
Yeah. I was born in Ohio, and I was an only child. I had a pretty normal childhood until I was about 7, and my dad was diagnosed with brain cancer. And then my normal childhood kind of stopped, and my house became kind of a little makeshift hospital, and my dad was paralyzed, so he lived in our living room, and we had nurses stay with him every day. And every day I would come home from school, and I wouldn't know the person that would be there with my dad, so I would end up just going up to my room and being by myself. And that's kind of when I started writing, because I spent a lot of time up in my room by myself. And when I was 11, my dad passed away. And about a year later, my mom got remarried to her high school sweetheart. And I was 13, and that was the start of a little bit of turmoil in my life. It was kind of hard because we didn't always see eye to eye.
How did, you know, in your dad being sick and dealing with it after you lost him, did your mom talk to you about things like that? Or what was it like? What was sort of your inner life in dealing with something so tough happening to you so young?
I was just used to it. My mom didn't talk to me much about it. It was just the way it was. I knew that other kids hadn't, a lot of my friends hadn't gone through anything like that. Most of them still had both their parents. And when my dad was paralyzed, it was more embarrassing to me because bringing friends home and having to explain why my dad was laying in a bed in the living room, it just was a little embarrassing. So I didn't have friends over very much. And it just was the way my life was. And we didn't talk about it very much. Mm-hmm. And I didn't expect him to pass away because I just thought he'd be like that forever.
You talked about then your life changes quite a bit. There's some turmoil with a new stepfather in the house. And when did you said you had started writing, but tell us a little more about sort of your journey and finding a college that was right for you and what you wanted to study. And
I ended up just finding a college called Crown College in Minnesota. It was a college that was the same denomination as the church that I had been attending. And I didn't know what I wanted to major in, but I finally settled on Christian education, which was something that I really had never thought about before. And I just felt that that's where I was supposed to go and what I was supposed to do. And I ended up doing a little internship in college with a group of high school and junior high school students here in Grand Rapids. That's how I ended up here.
Okay, so the title of the book is Do You Trust Me? Allowing Hope to Triumph Over Tragedy. Tell us what you mean about what the question, who would have posed that question to you?
Yeah.
Or tell me about that title a little more.
The title is not actually me asking the question. It's as if God were asking me the question, do you trust me? We had had a series of disappointments and losses and tragedies in our family. And just after all of that, I felt like if God were asking me, do you trust me? I would have had to say no after experiencing some of the things that had happened.
Let's talk more about your family because you have, tell me how many, about your kids, first of all.
We have 5 children. One of them has passed away. His name is Ethan. And we have a daughter, Emma, and a son, Andrew, and Matthew and Gavin.
People probably ask you that. I'm glad you said you were just so straightforward in saying you have 5
yeah.
children, because I'm sure that just even little things like that are probably tough when you've lost a child.
It is tough because I know my husband used to just kind of, he didn't want to get into it. He didn't want to explain. So if someone asked us how many kids we had, he would say 4. And then I would elbow him because I would always say 5 because I'm not going to leave out my son, Ethan, but my husband just doesn't want to have to explain it every single time we meet new people. So that's the difference between us. But I think as parents who lose children, we don't want to leave that one out. We don't want to act like, you know, we've forgotten that child, but sometimes it's easier just to not get into it.
Tell me what started happening in terms of Ethan's help, or actually all your boys, what you guys were experiencing.
Well, we had had our first child, Emma, in 2001, and everything was great, and we decided to have another one. In 2003, we had a little boy named Andy, and he just started off his life constantly sick. And I just remember going to the doctor all the time. He would have really crazy things, like he was 4 months old and he had bronchitis, or really crazy rashes, really high fevers, 105 degree fevers. He'd be on antibiotics 8 times in a year, and Emma had still never been on them. And he seemed to pick up every little thing that came around. And every time I'd bring him to the doctor would say, well, some kids just get everything that comes around. And I would think, well, I don't understand why he and Emma are so different. He had had ear infection after ear infection and bronchitis, staph infections. When he would get a cut, it would turn into a staph infection.
Oh, my gosh.
Really quickly. He would get pink eye with every cold. If I took him in for blood tests, his white cell count was so high, they would call me and say, we need to test for leukemia because it was just so unusual. So he was just our little medical mystery. Mm-hmm. And when he started to have all these health concerns, Bart, my husband Bart, and I decided maybe we won't have any more kids until we figure this out. But we ended up getting pregnant anyway. In 2005, we had another little boy named Ethan. And Ethan started off his life pretty normally, but then he started to show the same pattern of sickness that Andy had. So when Ethan was 6 months old, he had already had about 4 ear infections and constant viruses and just started to raise a few red flags.
Yeah. So how, first of all, how did you and your husband and Emma deal with, I mean, it's got to be constant difficulty just to have a normal life if someone's always sick in your family.
Yeah. It was more just the constant worry that it caused me. I became kind of afraid to take him anywhere. And, you know, I don't want to go to the grocery store because he might pick up something. And so I think I started to be a little bit more worried and paranoid. And I didn't want to take him to the doctor because I thought they would think I was a hypochondriac. And
oh my gosh.
But we were always there. We always were in the doctor's office, it seemed.
So when did you start to find out more what was affecting your two boys at the time?
We didn't know until my son Ethan was born in July of 2005. And by March of 2006, he had come down with another really bad virus. And his fever was 105. And for me, with these boys, that wasn't unusual. But it lasted for 3 days and it wouldn't go away. And they said he had an ear infection. So I had taken him in to get antibiotics. And after a few days of antibiotics, nothing had changed. So I brought him back for a different antibiotic. And they tested his blood and said he was septic, which meant his infection was now in his bloodstream. And so the people at the hospital sent him on an ambulance to Duluth. When we got there, they said his liver was failing and that they couldn't deal with it there, so they put him on a helicopter to the cities. And so I had just left the house just, you know, with nothing with me, thinking I'm just going to go to the ER for a quick trip, and then I'm in the cities. And by the time we got a diagnosis there, he had been diagnosed with something called HLH, which was a blood disorder that required chemotherapy and ultimately a bone marrow transplant. And it was way more than I ever expected when I left the house, you know, the day before. So we ended up putting my other two kids in my mother-in-law's house while Bart and I were prepared to live in the cities for 6 months while we waited for my son to finish chemo and get a bone marrow transplant. But after he had only been there for a week, I got a call from my mother-in-law saying they were sending Andy down as well, because he had started developing the exact same symptoms that Ethan had developed a week earlier. Really high fever, lethargy and malaise. He had, you know, a really bad cough, a really bad cold, and they were admitting him into the hospital in the cities. So for a while, we had two kids in Fairview Hospital, just right down the hall from each other in the pediatric intensive care unit, with the same symptoms and the same disease. And I felt at that time like my life was just falling apart, and it had happened so fast.
So this can't be easy to talk about, but I suppose in some ways it's good to, this is a part of your life, and you also get to remember Ethan in talking about it. So what happened?
Well, once my son Andrew showed up, they actually were able to do some more blood tests on him, and they discovered that the HLH, which can sometimes be a genetic disease and sometimes can be secondary with another underlying disorder causing it. And when Andy came and they did blood tests on him, they discovered that he had an immune deficiency disease called XLA, which means X-linked agammaglobulinemia. And the short of that is they don't make antibodies, which they couldn't see that in Ethan because his blood tests were all marred by the fact that he had been sick so much. All his blood tests were off and they couldn't see the immune deficiency. But with Andy, for some reason, it was able to show up in the blood tests. And they realized that both boys had an immune deficiency. So for their whole lives, they hadn't been making antibodies and they weren't able to fight any infections, which is why every time they got a virus, it got way out of hand. Mm-hmm. And it would turn into something more. And it made a lot of sense once we figured out what was going on. And it also was good because with the XLA being behind everything, Ethan would not need a bone marrow transplant. He would just finish up his chemotherapy and then start the treatment for XLA, which would be weekly infusions of antibodies from blood donors. So I thought this was really good news. But unfortunately, Ethan had been sick so severely that things just started to spiral out of control. And his liver and his kidneys and all his organs just started to shut down. So it happened so quickly. Within a day after I found out that everything was going to be okay, he actually ended up passing away. Mm. So it was like emotional high followed by extreme emotional low. And he passed away. And my son, Andy, who had been sharing a room with him at the time, was on a ventilator and unconscious in an induced coma with severe pneumonia. So we didn't know if Andy was going to make it either. And we went to plan Ethan's funeral and we thought, you know, maybe we should just wait and see if we're going to have one for Andy, because I didn't want to have a funeral for one son and have one 2 days later for another. That's how bad Andy was. But he was able to pull through. He did not start the chemotherapy, which is actually probably what hurt Ethan so much. Mm. I guess if you've already got a problem with your immune system, destroying what you have left with chemo isn't really good.
So. Right, right. That's Jessica Lee Johnson. We're talking with her about her life and the book she has put out. It's called Do You Trust Me? Allowing Hope to Triumph Over Tragedy. So you're at that point in your life. Where are you in terms of your faith and prayer? I mean, it's got to be so, you probably never expected to be at that such a low point in your life.
Yeah, after my dad died, I guess I learned at an early age that things don't always work out. And even if you pray for things, they don't always work out. Well, then I met my husband, who's the exact opposite of me. He's the eternal optimist. And he always said, you know, everything always works out in time. Everything will always work out. And once we got married and things started happening for us, we had kids. He got a good job. We had a brand new house. I started to think, you know, maybe he's right. Maybe everything always will work out. And I don't need to worry about anything. So when Ethan got sick, my husband was saying, don't worry, everything will work out. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you know, things don't always work out for me. So I think my husband said that he had felt that God was asking him, do you trust me? And my husband would say, I will trust you if Ethan survives. Mm. And then when Ethan didn't, my husband finally, for the first time, I think he was at a crossroads in his faith where he always thought everything would work out. And for once, something did not work out. So he was left, I think, really confused. And I was actually more just pessimistic, more like, yeah, I told you. I didn't think it would work out. And I just became very, very negative and very pessimistic and just started to think, why pray? Because God's just going to do what he wants anyway.
So how do you move through that?
Well, for me, it was about a 5-year process, because after Ethan died, we decided to try and have another kid. And now we knew that I carried a genetic defect for a disease that only affects boys, and that it can happen you have a 1 in 4 chance of it happening. So when we went about having another kid, I prayed. I thought, well, I'm just going to pray and hope that this child is healthy. And in 2007, we had a little boy, and he was diagnosed with XLA as well. Even though he had a 75% chance of being healthy, he had it. And that was a real, just a real knockdown to my faith. I felt like I had a target on my back and like I had been knocked down again. And I tried to stand up and get on with my life, and then I was knocked down again. That was not good. So then 2 years later, we decided we'll have one more kid, because we always talked about having 4 kids. We had had 4 kids, but Ethan was gone, so we had 3 kids. And so we were going to have another one, and it would be like my bonus child. I had had 5, but I would only have 4 in my house, because that's all I thought I could handle. So we had another little boy in 2009, and his name was Gavin, and I just figured, you know, Gavin will be okay, because God knows how much I can handle. And I've already got I already had at that point two kids with XLA. I was doing weekly gamma globulin infusions on them, and that's a lot. You know, mm-hmm. I have to give them 2 hour long infusions every week. And I just figured, you know, God knows that I've had more than most people. So this kid is going to be healthy. And then 2 weeks after Gavin was born, we got the blood test results saying that he also had XLA. And after that, I just thought, you know, I've been asked to handle more than the average person. And I just started to almost turn my back on my faith because mm-hmm. I figured I've prayed for the last two kids to not have XLA, and they did. And I prayed for Ethan to survive, and he didn't. And I just started to think there was really no point in praying because it wasn't, I never got what I wanted anyway. So I figured mm-hmm. if God's will is set in stone, there's no point in me trying to change it.
When did you change? How did you work through that?
After a couple more years, my son Andrew was diagnosed with a lung disease called bronchiectasis that he got after the pneumonia. He was in the hospital. When he and Ethan were in the hospital, he had a very serious pneumonia, and it actually damaged his lungs permanently. And we started doing therapy in 2010 with this vest. It's a compression vest used by people with cystic fibrosis, and it shakes the mucus that's trapped in his lungs. It shakes it loose so we can cough it up. And I just thought, you know, here's one more thing that I've been asked to do. And I just got just eternally negative. And after all that, I almost just turned away from my faith entirely until 2011. My son Gavin was 20 months old, and he was sick. I brought him to the doctor, and we were on our way home, and I let him play out in the yard for a little bit. And I turned my back for a few minutes to talk to my husband. And when I turned back, Gavin wasn't there. And we looked everywhere for him. I figured he had probably gone to my mom's because she lives next door to us now. But we have 45 acres of woods. And the one thing that separates my property from my parents' property is a stream. And this was in April. And with all of the thawing snow and everything falling into the stream, I knew it was a pretty big stream and there were rapids. And after my husband and I searched everywhere that Gavin could possibly be, I knew that he probably tried to go to my mom's house. So I ran up the driveway while my husband searched up and down the stream looking for him. And after searching for about a half an hour and not finding him, I started to think maybe he had fallen in the stream, and the Mississippi River is right at the end of the stream. It flows into the Mississippi. So I thought, you know, I finally realized that all this time I had been trying to take control of my kids' health, of my kids' future, of the outcome of everything. And I realized how out of control I really am and how none of this is in my control. Mm-hmm. And their health isn't in my control. I do what I can. I take them to the doctor. I give them their medicine. I give them their injections. But ultimately, it's not in my hands. And at that moment, when Gavin was lost, I realized I don't know where he is. And if I could sprout wings and fly up into the sky and look down, maybe I could find him, but I can't. And I realized that I am only one person and I can only be in one place at one time. And I couldn't find Gavin in my own strength. And I figured that God wasn't trustworthy because he had allowed my son Ethan to die. But in that moment, when Gavin was lost, I realized I don't have any other choice but to trust God, because I seriously can't trust myself when I am so limited and I'm just one person. So I realized there is something bigger than me, and I have to trust in something bigger than me, because I am not capable of doing all the superhuman things mm-hmm. that I had been trying to do. So that's when I realized I can't just trust in myself. I can't do everything. And we did end up finding him. I think he did try to cross the stream, but he couldn't. So he walked alongside the stream for quite a ways until we finally found him. And he was sitting next to it, just on the bank, just kind of crying and probably wondering where his mother had gone. When we finally found him, I think I just kind of gave up control of my life and just kind of handed over the reins and said, I'm done. If I don't trust in God or someone bigger than me, then I'm trusting in myself. And I realized I'm quite limited. So it was a very freeing thing to just finally let go and say, I am done trying to control everybody's life.
And did it make you more, because you described that you were negative because of all these things that happened. Did it make you a more positive person? Did it make like your, all of the things you need to do for your kid's health? Did it make that kind of thing? So that doesn't make it easier because it's got to just be difficult.
Just trying to find, you know, be thankful and say, at least we have this. I ended up, the silliest thing is watching American Idol. One day they did this Idol Gives Back fundraiser, and I was so negative about the vest, doing the vest on my son Andrew, because I did the weekly injections, I gave him their medicine, and I had to, you know, keep them away from germs at all times. And when Andy got the was diagnosed with the lung disease, and I had to do the vest for half an hour twice a day, you know, I kept thinking, there are not that many hours in the day. He's in school. I don't want to get up a half an hour earlier. And, you know, we have to do this twice a day. And I just got really negative about the vest. I hated the vest. I just wanted to burn it. And then on Idol Gives Back, they had a little girl with a serious lung disease. And the only way she could live a normal life was with the vest. But her parents couldn't afford it. And Simon Cowell walked in and handed them their very own vest. And they were so thankful. They were crying. And I thought, if I could just change my perspective a little bit and be thankful that my son has this and that we're able to afford this and that we can do this for him so that his lungs are clear. You know, it was a matter of perspective. Instead of seeing it as a curse, seeing it as a blessing, and just changing my viewpoint on those things really helped.
It's Jessica Lee Johnson. Her book is called Do You Trust Me? Allowing Hope to Triumph Over Tragedy. Did your husband come to think this way too? Family life is difficult anyway, and losing a child and how you feel about your faith.
Yeah, it's amazing how different men and women are just in general. And when I would want to just talk about things and talk through things, he would want to sit and be quiet and just think. So just dealing with it, we were very different in the way we wanted to deal with our loss. And with the vest, I think he was kind of negative doing that too and doing injections. I'm the one that does all that. And he'd be like, oh, is it time to do the vest again? And I'm thinking, we need to be more positive about this. So Andy learns to do it on his own. And it's been a struggle just trying to incorporate these things into our lives.
And how about Emma?
She's been a real trooper. She's the oldest and she's the only one that is unaffected health-wise. And I think maybe she might struggle with getting a little bit less attention than the boys. And I try really hard to try to make sure it's balanced, but she's been really good throughout it all.
So, Jessica, what made you want to tell your story and be, I mean, to be so honest?
Actually, when my son died, I really found it hard to be around other people that had not experienced a loss in their family, or especially the loss of a child. I just found it really hard to be around people who had nothing wrong in their family or people who had all their kids. It was too hard for me. I only wanted to be around people who understood. And unfortunately, I didn't find a whole lot of people who understood. And I tried to read books, maybe about people who had lost children. There really weren't that many. And I thought, you know, someday I'm going to write our story, because I had always had an interest in writing. And I thought, someday I'm going to write it. But it just never seemed like it was the right time. Or I was still so bitter that the whole book would have been one long ranting session and nobody would have wanted to read it. And then when Gavin got lost and I finally kind of was able to put things in perspective, the book had a lot more positive spin. So I started writing it right away after Gavin was lost and then found again. I started writing it then and trying to offer hope and encouragement to other parents who have lost children, just so that they know that the crazy thoughts they're having or the feelings they're experiencing and whatever, that they're not the only ones that have ever gone through this. I just want to be that friend that maybe they don't have. Someone that can say, I've been there and you're not crazy and you're not alone. And just to be just one more support for someone who's just going through this.
So tell me a little more about what your sons will always need transfusions.
Yeah. Every week for the rest of their lives until they maybe can have gene therapy. But gene therapy is still very experimental and very risky. And as long as they have a treatment that's working, we're just going to stick with it. Okay. So I'm hoping that when they're 30, maybe there will be a cure. But at this time, there isn't. So we do these injections every week. And so I do it on all three of them and gives them the antibodies that they can't make on their own. And it works pretty well. Keeps them relatively healthy.
Oh, good. And are they, they're in school? They're pretty normal
Andy
kids?
Andy's the only one that's in school. Matthew will start next year.
Oh, yeah, they're too little.
Well, but he's nine, so he's in third grade, and he's doing well. He hasn't missed a single day of school due to sickness.
Oh, great.
He's doing well.
Well, and besides the book, you said you're writing a blog for IG Living?
Yeah, the Immune Deficiency Foundation has a magazine, and IG stands for immune globulin. So anyone that's living their life with immune globulin, there's an online magazine and an actual magazine, and our family is going to be featured in the magazine in January, and I've been writing a blog for the online magazine. My blog focuses on what it's like to be a parent to kids with immune deficiencies.
Mm-hmm. It's igliving.com. You can see Jessica Lee Johnson's blog there, and you can also find more information on her book and her writing at her website, jessicaleejohnson.com. Mm-hmm. And can people find the book?
Yeah,
it's in bookstores too.
It's in Grand Rapids at Inspirations Bookstore and the Village Bookstore, and it's in Baxter at Bethany Book and Gift, and online at amazon.com.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.